A quarter of a mile ahead of us, we saw the hunchbacked bird shapes squatting obscenely in the treetops, thick as some devil's fruit in the orchards of hell. "They're off the kill." Lauren was jubilant. "Something's keeping them up in the trees in the sky." He stopped the Land Rover and switched off the ignition. We climbed out, and Lauren checked the load of his big .375 Magnum, changing the solid bullets for soft-nosed ones that would deliver a heavier knockdown blow. "We'll walk up," he said. "I'd love a chance at a big black-maned lion." He snapped the bolt of the rifle closed. "Take the shotgun, Ben. Load with buckshot." This is my sort of thinking. If a lion is far enough away to warrant the use of a rifle, then he and I have got no quarrel. Closer than that, I like a weapon that I can't miss with. Lauren set off through the waist-high grass. I followed him, keeping out on his flank to open my line of fire, the shotgun loaded for lion, and my pockets bulging with spare shells. We moved in slowly, trying to find the focal point of this gathering of vultures, for they were scattered in the trees over an area of half a square mile. Every step heightened our tension with the expectation of walking on top of a pride of lions lying in the grass. Lauren signalled each change of direction to me as we quartered carefully back and forth over the ground. From the trees around us, the birds launched into flight, changing miraculously from ungainly repose into something graceful and beautiful as they entered their true element. My throat was dry with excitement and a pleasurable fear. I could see Lauren was sweating through the back of his shirt, not entirely from the heat. His every movement was charged with restrained energy, ready to explode at the first sign of the quarry. I love this part of the hunt, for there is the atavistic urge of the hunter still hidden in most of us. It was only the killing that repulsed me. Lauren froze, rifle at high port. He was staring ahead, and I braced myself for the heavy detonation of the shot that I knew must follow. But the seconds passed slowly as dripping oil, and still Lauren stood with only the slightest movements of his head as he searched. Quietly, I moved up beside him. Ahead of it was an area of flattened and trampled grass. In the center of it lay the body of a dead buffalo, his belly bloated with gas, and big, shiny green flies swarming over his dead eyes and into his open mouth. I could see no marks of claws in the thick hide, with its coarse black hair blotched with patches of shiny baldness and rough scab. I looked down at the ground, not wishing to tread on a twig, as I moved again. And I saw the small, childlike human footprint in a patch of ant-turned earth. I felt the hair at the back of my neck prickle. We'd walked into something a damn sight more dangerous than a pride of lions. Quickly I looked back to the dead buffalo, and for the first time noticed 2 inches of a frail reed stalk protruding from the folded skin of the neck. The flesh around it was swollen, tight and hard. "Low, low," I croaked huskily. "Let's get the hell out of here. This is a bushman kill." Lauren's head jerked around and he stared at me. I saw the rim of his nostrils fade to china white. "How do you know?" he demanded hoarsely. "Footprints at your feet." He glanced down. "Arrow in the buffalo's neck." He was convinced. "This is your shari, Ben. What do we do?" Now he was sweating as heavily as I was. I said, "Slowly, slowly. Don't turn your back, and don't move suddenly. They're watching us, Low, probably right here." We began backing off, clutching our weapons with sweat-greasy hands, eyes darting restlessly from side to side. Talk to them. Talk to them, for God's sake, Ben, Lurin whispered. I found time to examine the discovery that the threat of poison could turn even a man like Lurin into a coward. Can't take the chance. Anything could trigger them. They may be behind us. His voice shook, and I felt my skin between the shoulder blades cringe as I listened for the flute of the arrow. With each pace backwards, I felt my fear shrinking. And 50 yards from the kill, I risked hailing them. Peace, I called. Peace. We mean you no harm. The reply came immediately, bird-like and disembodied, seeming to emanate from the heated air itself. Tell the big whitehead to lay down his weapon, for we do not know him. Hi, I cried out to my relief and delight. Hi, my brother. His eye was bright as the yellow moon, his hoof struck fire from the iron hills. We sang the buffalo song together, the men squatting around the leaping fire, clapping out the complicated rhythm with our hands. The women danced in an outer circle around us, swaying and shuffling, miming the buffalo and his gallant hunter. The firelight shone on their golden yellow skins, their tiny childlike bodies, with the startling bulge of buttocks and the fat little yellow breasts joggling to the dance rhythm. The arrow bird flew from my hand swift as a bee or a stooping hawk. The branches of the trees around us were heavy with festoons of raw meat hung out to dry, and beyond the firelight, the jackal and hyena howled their frustrations to the star-bright heavens as they snuffed the tantalizing odors. The blood, when it flowed, was bright as a flower, and sweet as wild honey was the flesh of his body. The dance ended at last, and the women giggled and trilled as they flocked to the fire to cram more meat into their little round bellies. Bushmen and women are awed by physical size, and to them Loren was a huge golden giant. They discussed him in a frank and intimate manner, starting at his golden head and working downwards until I laughed out loud. "What's so funny?" Lauren demanded, and I told him. "My God, they didn't say that!" Lauren was shocked, staring at the women in horror, and they covered their mouths with their hands as they giggled. I sat between Chai and Lauren, one of them smoking and the other eating a Romeo and Juliet cigar, and I translated for them. They spoke of the animals and the birds, for they had a common love of the chase. My grandfather told me that when he was a young man, the buffalo in this land below the great river were as locusts, black upon the earth. But then the red sickness came. Rinderpest, I explained to Lauren. And they died, so that they fell one upon the other so thick that the vultures could not fly with the load of their bellies, and their bones lay in the sun like the fields of white Namaqua daisies in the springtime. They talked on after the women and children had curled up and fallen asleep like little yellow puppies in the dust. They spoke of noble animals and great hunts, and they became friends beside the fire, so that at last Chai told me shyly, I should like to share a hunt with such a one. I could show him an elephant, like those that my grandfather knew, with teeth as thick as my waist and as long as the shaft of a throwing spear. And there goes any further pretense of looking for ruins and caravan routes, I thought, as I watched Lauren's face light up at the suggestion. But, I added, he says you must leave the Land Rover here. They heard us coming for half an hour before we arrived today, and he says this elephant is old and cunning, which means we will have to get some sleep now. We've got one hell of a day ahead of us tomorrow. By the time the sun came up, we'd been on the march for 3 hours. Dew had soaked our trousers to the knees, but we had walked the night's chill out of our joints and were extending ourselves, stepping out with full stride to keep the two tiny brown figures in view. Chai and Gal were into that loose-limbed trot that would eat away the miles all day without flagging. Their little brown forms danced ahead of us through the thickening thorns and jesse bush. "How you doing, Ben?" I grunted and changed the shotgun to my other shoulder. "The little bastards can certainly foot it." "Brother, you've only just started," I warned him. They led us into bad broken country, where harsh black ridges of ironstone thrust from the earth, and the thorn was grey and spiny and matted, where deep ravines rent the walls of steep tableland outcrops, and the heat was a fierce, dazzling thing that sucked the moisture from our bodies and dried it in rings of white salt on our shirts. It was the type of country that a canny old elephant bull, pursued by men all his life, might choose as a retreat. We rested for half an hour at noon, seeking shade in the lee of a boulder, whose black surface was scalding to the touch, and drinking a few mouthfuls of lukewarm water. Then we went on, and almost immediately cut the spoor. There, and there, with the point of a poison arrow, Chai traced the outline of a pad mark on the iron-hard earth. "Do you not see it?" he asked with exasperation. And although we circled the area, tilting our heads learnedly, neither of us could make it out. "If that's an elephant spoor," muttered Lauren, "I'm a Chinese tinker." But Chai sat off, confidently on a new bearing through the thorns, and we climbed one of the rocky tablelands, following a trail that Lauren and I couldn't even see. Near the crest of the hill lay a pile of elephant dung, still moist despite the furnace-dry heat, and a cloud of yellow and orange butterflies hovered over it, attracted by the wetness. The dung looked like the contents of a coir mattress. "Veli Solly," I whispered to Lauren, "please fixy potty, chop chop." "The man's a bloody magician." Lauren shook his head in amazement as he unslung the heavy rifle from his shoulder and tucked it under his arm. We went on again, but slowly now, pausing frequently while Chai and Gal searched the impenetrable thickets of thorn ahead of us. It was a gut-aching business in this close bush, each step planned and made only at a signal from Chai's dainty pink-palmed hand, moving forward when the hand beckoned and freezing when it froze. "Come," said the hand, and we went on again. And then abruptly, stop. A quick cut-out sign, with the hand like a blade, and then bawling into a fist and pointing ahead. Bad luck to point with a finger at the quarry. We stood as still as death, sweat-shiny faces staring into the wall of thorn. And then suddenly the elephant loomed ghostly grey amongst the grey thorn, moving from us in a leisurely, sway-backed shamble. Grey skin wrinkled and old, hanging in bags and pouches at the belly and in the crotch of his back legs. The tail bare of tuft hair, the knuckles of the spine showing clearly through the ridged skin on his back. Old elephant, big elephant. "Stay here." Chai's hand pointed at Gal and me, and I nodded in acknowledgement. "Come with me." Chai's forefinger crooked at Lauren, and they went on together, circling out on the elephant's flank through the thorn. The bushman doll-like beside Lauren's bulk, leading him around for a clean shot at the head or shoulder. The elephant paused and began feeding from one of the thickets, delicately plucking the pale green shoots with the tip of his trunk, stuffing them into his mouth, completely unaware of danger. While out on his flank, Lauren reached a firing stand and braced himself, legs spread, leaning forward to meet the recoil of the heavy rifle. The shot was stunningly loud, shocking in the heat-drugged silence. I heard the bullet slap into flesh, and the elephant spun away from the impact, turning to face Lauren with its long yellow ivories lifted high, the huge grey ears cocked back, and it squealed as it saw the man. It squealed in anger, and a long, smouldering hatred now burst into flame. It crabbed sideways as it began the charge, blanketing Lauren's line of fire with a thicket of thorns. I saw Lauren turn and run out to the side, trying to open his front for a clear shot. His foot hit an ant-bear hole, and he fell in full run, going down heavily, the rifle flying from his hand, and lying stunned, full in the path of the charge. "Lauren!" I screamed, and then I was running also, armed with only a shotgun, racing to head the charge of a wounded bull elephant. "Here!" I screamed at it as I ran. "Here!" Trying to lead it off him, in the corner of my vision, I saw Lauren on hands and knees, crawling painfully towards his rifle. "Yah! Yay! Yow!" I screamed with all the strength of my lungs, and the bull checked his charge, his head swinging towards me, piggy eyes seeking me, trunk questing for my scent. I threw up the shotgun, and at 30 yards range I aimed for his little eyes, hoping to blind him. Blam, blam, I fired left and right into his face, and he came at me. I felt a vast sense of relief as his charge exploded towards me. I had taken him off Lauren. That was all that counted. With clumsy fingers I groped for fresh cartridges, knowing that before I could reload he would be upon me. "Run! Run, Ben! Run!" Lauren's voice, high above the ground-thudding charge of the bull. But I found my legs wouldn't function, and I stood in the path of the charge, groping stupidly for cartridges, which were useless as thrown peppercorns against this grey mountain of flesh. The blast of Lauren's rifle beat against my numbed brain once, twice. It crashed out, and like an avalanche, the grey mountain fell towards me. Dead already, the brain shattered like an overripe fruit at the passage of the heavy bullet. My feet were rooted to the earth. I couldn't move. I couldn't dodge. And the outflung trunk hit me with savage force. I felt myself thrown through the air, and then the cruel impact of earth, and my brain burst into bright colours and stabbing lights as I went out. "You silly bastard! You silly, brave little bastard!" I heard Lauren's voice speaking to me down a long, dark tunnel, and the sound of it echoed strangely in my head. Cool wetness splashed over my face, blessed wetness on my lips, and I opened my eyes. Lauren was sitting on the ground, my head was cradled in his lap, and he was splashing water from a bottle into my face. "Who are you calling a bastard?" I croaked up at him, and the expression of relief that flooded over his worried features was one of the most satisfying things I have ever seen.